Today, we're going to be reviewing the book, The Making of a Stand-Up Guy, by Charlie Murphy.
Yo, what's up?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems that the gist of the book is that you were on this desperate path to get out from under the shadow of your famous brother.
No, not at all. Go back. No, there was no desperate desire to get out of my brother's shadow. You know what I'm saying? Look, my brother is who he is, whatever, and, you know, Charlie Murphy is who he is. So, you know, everybody seems to say, oh, well, you're in your brother's shadow. But, you know, my brother was Eddie Murphy. I mean, he cast a big shadow over everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I ain't the only one. So, but no, I wrote this book so that people could get to know me and understand my path and my journey, you know, why I ended up where I ended up, you know. And you know, for me, doing stand-up and what have you, it wasn't about, you know, trying to get out of my brother's shadow. It was just, it was an opportunity that came up. And, you know, I took the bull by the horns and, you know, and rode it in.
In The Making of a Stand-Up Guy, you kind of walk us through your career so that we can find out who Charlie Murphy is. So I want to go step back just a little bit in your story. At one point in time, you changed your name to Omar Allah. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, there was a point in my life where, you know, they had the 5%ers. They're not exactly Muslims. They're like, you know, they believe that they're 5% of the population that have, you know, wisdom and understanding above everybody else. But basically, it was, you know, at that time, it was basically a gang I was in, you know.
Okay.
Opposite. So, yeah, I changed my name to Omar, stopped eating pork the whole night.
Did you change your name back to Charlie?
That was, you know, that was my 5% name. That, you know, that was my street name. You know, there was no official documentation. So, you know, once I decided that, being in jail and realizing that going down that path wasn't leading me nowhere, I just, you know, I went back to Charlie.
Now, speaking of jail, after you gave up the 5%ers, you did end up landing in jail. You served quite a bit of time. You committed a felony. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
I did about a year. You know, I mean, you look back. I mean, I didn't do anything really heavy. You know, just, you know, a robbery, armed robbery. I guess armed robbery is that's not so light, but yeah, that's, you know, armed robbery. You stick up kid, used to boost clothes from clothing stores, stuff like that, you know.
When you were in jail, you ate scrambled eggs, pancakes, and bacon. Is that a typical meal for someone in jail?
No, but I worked in a kitchen, so, you know, I got special preferences.
Okay.
You know, work in a kitchen, you know, you get the hookup, and, you know, I mean, jail is not a cool place to be, but during that time of my life as a youth, you know, you couldn't tell me that it wasn't, you know, that it wasn't cool because, you know, some of my friends were in there with me and, you know, I was working in the kitchen. So, you know, you had some liberties, you know, used to sell, you know, burgers and, you know, cupcakes and whatnot. And, you know, so I did well in jail.
Okay. You also seem to have done well in the military. You were in the Navy, but seems like you had problems getting into the Navy, but you finally got in. You said that you...
I had no problems getting into the Navy. It was all the other branches. they wouldn't take me. You know, when I got out of jail, my mother took me straight to the recruiting office, and she was basically like, look, take my son, please, or he's going to wind up dead. So we went to the Army. They asked if you ever been convicted of a crime. I said, yes. They said, oh, we don't want you. Went to the Air Force, same thing. Went to the Marines, same thing. So finally when I got to the Navy, they asked me, I was like, no. And they let me in. And off to boot camp.
And there's some folk that you mentioned in the book, for example, with Michael Jackson, Prince, Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you told us about Michelle Pfeiffer. Could you tell us about that incident when you first met her?
Very embarrassing encounter. I mean, basically, I had a situation where, you know, I had some gas, my stomach was bubbling, and, you know, we were on studio lot, and I creeped off somewhere thinking that I was going to go somewhere where I can, you know, kind of relieve myself without anybody, you know, having to bear witness to it, and as soon as I finished, she walks right up and says, hi, my name's Michelle. And I know she had, because it looked like her eyes watered up as soon as she got in the vicinity. I know she had to smell it, but,
Right, okay. If you see her again, would you apologize to her for that?
I act like it never happened.
On your journey to becoming a stand-up guy, you then went on to manage a music group. And then after that, you kind of got your break on the David Chappelle show. Do you consider that as your big break, the Chappelle show?
The Chappelle show was the situation where, I mean, everybody else sees it as a big break. It was definitely the vehicle that catapulted me, you know, into becoming like a household, you know, people seeing in movies and what have you, but they never really made a connection until, you know, after Chappelle's show, then they connected, then Charlie Murphy became a household name, and to this day, people are still, you know, tweeting and texting and telling me, wow, I didn't even know Charlie Murphy was in this movie, you know, I did so many, you know, different projects and movies, TV shows. I was on the Martin Show, CB4, Jungle Fever, did so many films and what have you. But, you know, it took Chappelle's show to really put me, you know, in a national spotlight.
Well, maybe you can kind of break a big story here on the Ink Spot. Man, what happened? What really happened with the Chappelle show? They were about to roll in the wheelbarrows of money for you guys, and then it just disappeared, and, you know, all the rumors and conspiracy theories started coming out. You know, in your opinion, what happened? Why did the Chappelle show, you know, just stop at its height?
Well, first of all, let me clear up one thing. The wheelbarrows of money was Dave. He was getting the wheelbarrows. And to be honest with you, I don't know. To this day, I don't know what the answer is. Dave never called and said, hey, look, this is what's happening, and, you know, we're not doing the show anymore. It was just like you get a call from the producers. It was like, we're not going to need you today. And then that turned into the next day. And the next day, all of a sudden, it's like, all right, well, you know, the show is not happening anymore.
And that was it, huh?
So, you know, I can only speculate as to, you know, what Dave was going through. I mean, he said it, you know, the pressures and, you know, not having the freedom to do what he wanted to do. Would I have made the same decision as him? I don't think so, but that's that man that, you know, he walks, you know, his own path. So I only God can judge him.
I want to ask you one last question about the book before you go, The Making of a Stand-Up Guy. You took us on this journey as you went on a quest to actually become a stand-up comedian. Do you think that you ever figured out, did you find what you were looking for on your way to becoming a stand-up guy?
I think I'm still finding it. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm learning to, you know, accept some of the mistakes that I've made in my life and learn from them. And, you know, I'm steady trying to grow both as a person and as an artist. You know, and I'm trying to use all my tools, everything that I'm, you know, picking up along the way to do that. You know, hopefully be able to leave my mark, you know, on this planet before I'm out of here.
Thank you, Charlie, for joining us here on the Ink Spot. Hey, man, you have a great day, and we really appreciate you calling in.
All right, guys. All right, no doubt. Thank you. I'm glad you read the book, too. Sound like you enjoyed it. Appreciate you.
We've just been talking with Charlie Murphy regarding his book. Gavin, what do you think of the book, The Making of a Stand-Up Guy?
I have to tell you, when I was reading this book, I was looking crazy in public because sometimes tears were coming down my face with laughter. I mean, this book was just so funny, and it was inspirational because you could see someone's path. Even when he hit rock bottom, he just kept fighting. I mean, he is a genuine fighter, even though you might think he comes from an easy life with his brother being rich. This guy was a genuine fighter, and he shows it in this book.
Erica.
Well, in reading his book, I found myself asking a lot of questions that were unanswered. And I like how the book started the way it ended, but it was the middle portion. And the name of the book is called The Making of a Stand-Up Guy. So when we're talking about the middle portion and what made this stand-up guy, it seems like there was a lot of things that were left out.
I love The Making of a Stand-Up Guy. I thought it was a great book. It felt to me, the book was written as a memoir. It felt to me like sort of a coming-of-age story where he is going through this process of discovering who he is. Now, when I asked Charlie about that and I suggested that he had this desperate need to get out of the shadow of his famous brother, he said that wasn't true. Did you get the sense? What do you think of that?
To your point, Stan, at the very end of the book, he mentioned he was doing stand-up, and someone was heckling him and said, oh, you know, you're Eddie Murphy's brother. Look at you. And he made a point to point that person out and say, oh, Eddie Murphy's brother, huh? People usually call me Charlie Murphy, which further tells me that it is something that's extremely important to him to be known as Charlie Murphy, not just as Eddie Murphy's brother.
So, Gavin, you don't buy this idea, this notion.
No, I'm not saying I don't buy that idea. I think you're overstating the idea. What he does is he responds to challenges. He had no problem not doing stand-up comedy until he got on another radio show and one of his co-actors on the Chappelle Show challenged him on radio and said that you can't do it. He didn't want to do it until someone said you can't do it. And then that's what pushed
him.
Wait. He had no problem working for his brother. In fact, he always felt like, I'm my brother's protector. But whenever he felt a perceived or real challenge, that's when he stepped up and said, I can do this myself. So it was more about an internal thing from what I got out of this, is that to tell me I can't do it, I'm going to show you.
Erica, you were saying that you were didn't know about all of the talents of Charlie Murphy.
Yes, all of the writing accolades that he has. And in the book, he mentioned Norbit. And I've seen that movie, and it's hilarious. And I had no idea he was the one that wrote it. So to his credit, you know, regardless of the things that I would have liked to seen in the book, I'm very glad to know him as an artist, not just as a comedian and an actor, but also as a writer.
Right. And yeah, Norbit, he also co-wrote Vampire in Brooklyn, and as I mentioned earlier, he managed a rap group, and he seemed to have a lot of talents. In fact, he sold one screenplay, The Peddler, for $150,000, sold another screenplay, Campfire Stories, sort of a Twilight Zone take. He sold that for $250,000. So he's done a lot of stuff. One of the questions, though, that comes up is, he sold these screenplays, he does this stuff, and he's able to break into the business. He's been in quite a few movies, Harlem Nights, Mo' Better Blues, Jungle Fever, The Players Club. Now, at one point in the book, he said that him and Eddie were estranged. They didn't talk to each other for 3 years. What do you make of that? What's your sense of what happened there? Now, I think, Eric, I agree with you on this particular point. That's something I would have liked for him to get into a little bit more, give us more of a sense of what happened there.
And the explanation that he offered was, you know, it was something so trivial and small, you know, who remembers what it was? And I'm thinking, dude, you remember what it was. But, you know, if you remember what it was and you prefer not to say, then say that. Instead of saying, oh, it was something so trivial, I never really, you know, remember what it was. But to be estranged from your brother, forget the fact that he's famous, but this is your brother, someone that you've known since birth. And the two of you have not spoken in 3 years. I would have liked to have known a little bit more about what may have happened. Now, I can speculate all I want. I don't know either one of these guys. But I do think it was something a lot deeper. And again, because of who he is and who his brother is, I think he kept it safe.
I think both of you guys are looking for a soap opera. I got to be honest. You're looking for a soap opera here. I mean, you're right. He didn't go into it. There was a fight. Fight was over. Let's move on to the next story. And that's pretty much how he handled it. And I didn't have any problem with it because
it's your
brother.
I think you're
what are you
going to
do, put your brother out there?
First of all, I mean, I think Erica is exactly right. There's much more to it than that, Gavin. I think you are way off base on this particular point. You would agree that
I absolutely agree.
Gavin. Loco, Looney Tunes.
You guys want more juicy, scintillating details about what broke up the brothers. Oh, my goodness.
Gavin, what you're thinking is that we're looking for like a tabloid type of story. We want real accounts of things that have happened, and it doesn't have to be knockdown, drag out, but don't completely omit it.
But you can see he made a point in this book to actually go after the tabloids. I mean, he reminisced about a simpler time when you can go to Studio 54 and not worry about someone taking your picture for money, reporting what you're doing. He spoke of that like this was the golden age. And now when people's, you know, personal misgivings are out in the public, he just thought that was awful. So when you read that, I think you can understand how he treats the stories throughout the rest of the book.
We've been talking about the book, The Making of a Stand-Up Guy by Charlie Murphy. Erica, do you give The Making of a Stand-Up Guy thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, despite a lot of things I said, I think he achieved what he was going after. I'd give it a thumbs up.
Gavin.
The book was laugh out loud funny. Charlie Murphy is a stand-up guy. I give the book a thumbs up.
I definitely give the book a big thumbs up. Gavin, I'm going to agree with you on that, although you said a lot of stuff here today I don't agree with you on. But in any case, I do agree that Charlie Murphy is a funny guy. When I read this book, I was, in fact, laughing. My kids, my wife, they're looking at me like, you know, what is wrong with this person? So he told some great stories. He did give me a sense of who Charlie Murphy was. He gave me a good feel for his journey to discover and make his own path. I still say, and I maintain forever, that a big part of his journey was to break this connection to his brother and be his own person. I think he achieved that very well in the book. I highly recommend the book. I think it's an excellent read.